welcome to Conversations with Moon, Body, Soul. Today, my special guest is one of my dear friends. Her name is Karen Niche. She is a world traveler. She's originally from France. She now is in Los Angeles, but she's about to leave us again for another trip. And she's also a talented actress, and she's introduced me to holotropic breath work, which I'm really excited to properly try out. And I just wanted to have her on the show to talk about her mini adventure. So welcome, Karen.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited. We've been talking about doing this for a long, long time.
I think it's been 6 months that we're trying to do it. And it's finally happening, but we are both traveling so much. And here we are.
Gladly. So thank you so much for coming. You originally are from France.
Yes. Can you tell?
Can you guys understand her accent?
I'm going to try to talk my best with my English, but I mean, some people can't really figure it out where I come from because I actually learn English in Germany. So it's kind of like a mix of like French and German. But yeah.
For sure. I hear that. I didn't have any idea where you were from at first. When did you first come over to America, though?
The first time I came to LA, first time in America was LA, and it was in 2012. So not that long ago. And I actually moved to Los Angeles in 2014. Yeah, late 2014, 2015. So it's been 5 years.
I moved to Los Angeles in 2014.
Ooh, yeah, it was a good year. It was actually a great year for me.
That's incredible. But you grew up in France.
Yeah, I grew up in south of France, a tiny town called La Ciotat near Marseille. Marseille is a huge port town. Second largest city in France. It's beautiful. I mean, I was so lucky to grow up in such an amazing place, like right on the water and very, very simple life. I loved it, but it was too small after a while, you know. I wanted to go and explore the world and live somewhere else.
I've never been there, but I've been there on Google and it looks fantastic.
Yeah, you have to come someday.
I would love to. So when did you first then venture out and start your travels?
I guess it was my second year of college. Basically, I came out of high school and I had no idea what I wanted to do. So I just went to business school because it was like everyone around me were doing it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to try it out. But also I had in mind that I wanted to travel abroad. And the school I went to had this amazing like abroad, you know, like how do you say?
Exchange programs.
And so I started to travel and I ended up in Berlin. I fell in love with Berlin so much. And I was 20. And after finishing my study, I was like, I had no idea what I wanted to do neither. I was just like kind of like wandering around. And I ended up staying in Berlin. And I lived there for almost 3 years until the time I was like, okay, time to move on, maybe to find a job or something. You know, I had a little pressure of my parents and I could not stay this little bird forever, you know, like. So I moved back to Paris and I started a career in the fashion industry, which ended up not being what I wanted to do neither. But you know, this is life. We go through phases, and especially me, I feel like the past 10 years I just reinvented myself over and over, and I finally came to the realization that it was okay, and you know, that I truly believe that human beings are not made to stay the same forever, and we're always changing. And so for me to like came to the conclusion that that was okay, I could be a different person, you know, all over my life, was pretty big. So I stayed in Paris for 2 years, almost 3 years. And then I kind of had like a nervous breakdown, a little moment of realization where I was not really happy in my relationship. I was not really happy in my work. So I started to travel to Los Angeles, to California, because I always had in mind that, you know, this beautiful Californian dream. And we traveled with my girlfriends and we first spent 2 weeks and then a month. And then after a year, I decided that I wanted to live in California. So I packed my bags, say goodbye to my ex-boyfriend and quit my job in 2 weeks. It was an office job. It really didn't, I mean, I learned a lot, but didn't really mean anything to me, to my soul. And I just followed my intuition and moved to Los Angeles with one suitcase. And here I am 5 years later. I was not supposed to stay that long.
That's incredible. I love hearing that. And I love hearing that you like decided that it was okay to change what you were doing.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of a realization. Like, I remember really well the morning that I took the decision to leave Paris and try something completely new. And I opened my armoire and I was like facing my clothes. I really, really remember this moment. And it's like if something inside you tells you, you know, like you need to do something, like you can't stay here. And yeah, that day I sent an email at my work and had a conversation with my ex-boyfriend and started from there.
I have chills all over.
It was not easy. It sounds like it's easy, but it was quite challenging, but I loved it. It was very stimulating.
I feel like I remember that moment too when I was in Kansas and like,
yeah,
I was like, I just can't, I don't want to live here. Like I want to explore. I want to go somewhere else. I want to go somewhere warm. It was actually snowing in May when I made my decision. Wow. So that was pretty easy. It was like May 5th. It was my grandpa's birthday and I called him and I was like, has it ever snowed on your birthday before?
You do? Okay, I need to get out of here.
He was like, only once when I was like 5. I'm like, okay, well, I can't risk it doing this again. I love the sun.
That's amazing. No, California is a great place. I love being here. And also the big thing with me moving here was like in France, we have kind of this mentality of like, they put people in boxes kind of, you know, like it's, you have one pass, one job and you do it for 20 years and this is your life. And I've seen in LA and I've seen in the US that this place gave me the chance to be who I wanted to be. And there is many things that I hate about the United States, but there is so many things that I love too. And one of the main things is that it's like I can be wherever I want to be and be creative and be myself without anyone really judging. And, you know, it's super easy. You want to start your business, you can start your business easily. It's just...
I feel like Los Angeles specifically, maybe California in general or the West Coast, it's very much that energy. And maybe in other big cities, it's that energy. But where I'm from in the Midwest, I feel it's more what you're talking about of like, this is your path. You do it, you stay. Like that is what it feels like from where I'm from.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Well, I totally get it. I mean, I feel like even my parents, they still don't understand what I'm doing. You know, they call me, we talk pretty often and they call me and they're like, okay, what are you doing today?
So what do you do? What are your days like?
Let's hear it. I do so many different things. It's crazy. I'm kind of one of those people who are just like changing all the time. And I have like, how do we say, my eggs in different basket? Is it right?
I
like this. I like this a lot. So yeah, I mean, I would say my main source of income is acting. I started this journey actually about 2 years ago and it's been quite amazing. It's an amazing like tool to explore yourself. And so, I mean, I'm a former dancer. I danced the past almost 20 years of my life. So it was a good, I would say, addition to the dance. Dance allowed me to like express myself in a different way. And acting is also, you know, a tool to explore yourself. So I like this a lot. And so that's what I do. I mean, mainly, but I travel a lot as well. And I write about travels as well.
Yeah. So that's a great segue because one of the main reasons when I was finally like, you're coming on the podcast, it was after you told me you were going to Guatemala.
Yes.
So you recently got back from Guatemala. You spent time there in the jungle. What made you want to go to Guatemala?
Well, I always been kind of like an history and archaeology nerd. When I was younger, I wanted to be an archaeologist so bad. I mean, it never happened, but the passion is still here. So, I always liked the Mayan word and this history behind this culture. And I wanted to travel Central America, but I never really thought about Guatemala because I didn't know that much about it except Tikal. Everyone heard about Tikal. I feel like it's one of the major ancient city. I wanted to travel and I just decided, I mean, I remember watching a documentary on National Geographic talking about this discovery of the largest pyramid in the world that is like under the jungle of Guatemala, in northern Guatemala, and that the only way to access it is to trek literally 5 days in the jungle without anything around. It's just like a deep, deep tropical jungle. So I heard about it and I started to like read about it and listen to podcasts, and I was like, wow, fascinated. Like I had to go there. I had to see it with my own eyes. So I convinced my partner, and it was actually pretty easy to convince him because he's quite adventurous too. And we're backpacking also pretty often, you know, so it was not like, we're not like unfamiliar with camping or anything. So yeah, I convinced him and we decided to go, and we waited to go during the dry season because you don't want to go during the wet season.
When is the dry season?
So the dry season starts, I don't want to say, so I went in March, April. March, April is the hottest season there. So the driest, but at least you're not like in the mud with the mosquitoes, or like the only thing that is like a little annoying in a jungle, I would say at this time of the year, is just the ticks. You have to be very careful because they are everywhere. But way better to go this season.
Yeah. So you planned your trip. How far in advance did you plan it? I feel like you told me about it quite a year
in advance.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I feel like I started to read about it and then, you know, really dive into it. And then at the same time, I think I won this contest on Instagram. I won like a 5-night stay in Belize in this eco resort in the jungle too. So I was like, okay, there is no reason for us to not go. Like, we have to first go to Belize. And then we did Belize, and then we crossed straight to Guatemala and stayed in northern Guatemala and did a loop. Ended up going back to south of Belize and did all the coast, and then ended up on an island and went back to LA. Yeah, I didn't want to come back.
How long were you in the 5-day jungle trek? So is it 5 days in, 5 days out?
So no, you have different loops, but I did the 4 nights and 5 days hike. You can do 5 nights and then you can do 7 nights. So you do pretty much the tour of it. I mean, we started, so we flew to, do you want me to tell you the full story?
Oh yeah, I want to hear everything.
I'm going to try to be quick. But we started in LA, we flew to Belize City, we stayed a few days in Belize, and then, excuse me, we ended up staying in Flores. So Flores is the closest town that you can find near the beginning of the trek. So we stayed one night in Flores, super cute, on a lake, a little like colonial island. And they actually have, so the place where we stay, they have this amazing travel agency that help you to set up the tour. I would recommend to go with guides because it's not safe to go on your own. And you also want to have people that help you to carry everything you need for 5 days in the jungle. So a lot of water, a lot of food. We actually had a cook, mules to carry everything because it's between like 5 hours to 7 hours a day hike. So it's pretty intense. So we stayed in this hostel and they had a travel agency, and they set up with, you know, like the guides and everything. And the day after, we're on the road at 5 a.m. in the morning. They picked us up and it was just Riley and I and two other couples. So you start with 3 hours on the dirt road, like very, very bumpy, and you just start entering the jungle. It's amazing. It's so deep already, you know. So you drive 3 hours and then you end up in this village called Camelita. And this is where the trail starts. So you meet with your guides, you pack up all your stuff, and then you start the hike the same day. And the first day is 6 hours hike until the first camp. You spend one night at the camp in a city, in ancient city called El Tintal. So basically El Mirador, I didn't talk about El Mirador really, but it's supposed to be the birthplace of Maya civilization.
Where the pyramids are, where you were headed.
Exactly.
Okay.
So it's literally, I think it was between like 50 to 60 cities we crossed inside this jungle. It's so spread out. It's so hidden because the plants, the vegetation grew on it, on the temples, on the plazas, on the platforms. So it's not well excavated yet. It's in the process since the late 80s and early 90s.
That is so fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, I remember really well also, I came across this project called Mirador Bassin Project. It's a group of people, and the main archaeologist at the head of the project, his name is Dr. Richard Anson. He's amazing. He's like Indiana Jones, like a modern day Indiana Jones.
I think of Indiana Jones whenever you tell these stories. I feel like you're a little Indiana Jones.
Oh my gosh, that was my dream. It's a different story, but like, yeah, I always dreamed to build this adventure. But yeah, so this guy and his team are doing amazing work. It's been like, I think 20 years, more than 20 years that work there. Now they have hundreds of people helping excavating. They also protect the rainforest because this rainforest is also in danger. So they do an amazing job about preserving and then also keeping the history and keeping the ruins and excavating and everything.
So you said when you were hiking that you passed through ancient civilizations, but are there still people living there?
Nobody.
Now?
Nobody. Okay. The last people around this area are the Mayan living in this tiny village, Carmelita, where we started from. And actually, the Mirador Bassin Project is doing a great job with making them work. So it's kind of this part of ecotourism, you know, that helps the people that live in the village and the native instead of just like leaving them without any resources. So our guides were from this village. They grew up in this village. They were born in this village. And they've been actually formed and trained by the Mirador Bassin Project to become guides. It's to show their surroundings. So it's local people that bring you in the jungle. It's probably the safest way because they know everything about the jungle. It's also a really high concentration of jaguars and pumas there. Yeah.
Wow. Did you see any?
I didn't.
I think we went on a hike like right when you got back and you were telling me about
owler monkeys.
The monkeys. And then you also said that you were like starting to feel more comfortable and you saw a really pretty lizard maybe or something, and it ended up being super poisonous.
Oh yes. So that was the last night we climbed this pyramid, so the largest pyramid, La Danta it's called, and our guide didn't want us to stay on top of it because the night was coming and it's a 30 minutes walk to the camp. So they were like, no, now we have to go. And we're like, no, we want to stay. We want to see the sky and the stars. It's amazing. So we ended up staying. We convinced them, but it was not a great idea. No, I saw so many spiders, like giant tarantula and this like tiny lizards. It was so pretty. It was multicolored. And I came close to this lizard and then the guys told me, it was like, you better not touch it. I'm like, why? It's one of the most poisonous lizard that you can find around. I was like, okay.
I remember seeing you shared a video when you were inside one of the pyramids and there was a huge tarantula huge beetle. And I'm talking like the size of maybe bigger than
it was an
hand.
Alien. It was an alien spider. It was crazy. It's this tiny. So it was inside the necropolis, I think. It was their cemetery. And you can enter this tomb. And so you literally, you're on your knees in this tiny tunnel, and I'm claustrophobic. Also, that was a great way to face my fears, this dream, because, it was scary. It sounds insane, but it was not that dangerous when you're always the right people. But
I feel like the energy already of going into a tomb would feel very like...
It was, I don't know how to describe it. I didn't feel uncomfortable that much, but then I started to panic when I saw those giant
the bugs are what would freak me out.
Yeah. And we're all like, you know, super close to each other and like in this tiny place. I mean, I would have not stayed for 2 hours there for sure.
How long did you get to explore once you made it into like the pyramid area?
So you basically spend one night at the first camp and then the second day it's 7 hours hike again, and you end up at the main site. So at El Mirador. So El Mirador was like a big, big complex. It was the major city back in the days during the pre-classic Mayan period. So after the second day of hike, you end up at Mirador and then you spend a night and then you have 2 days to explore there. So yeah, you have the camp, you know, everything is set up and then you can just go and explore with the guides and climb the pyramids. And we watch so many sunsets on top of pyramids and you just climb it and then you're like above the canopy, above the jungle, and you just look at all around you 360 and the only thing you see is green jungle. It's amazing. And some pyramids also like aligned with each other. That was the main purpose of why they built those pyramids. They called it the Sacred Mountains. So, of course, they were studying celestial events and they were made for astronomical purpose. But it was also a place of ceremonial and spiritual places. So you can compare it to cathedrals in Europe. But they build it a very specific way. And when you're on top of them, you can see the other ones aligned with the one you're on top to. So it's beautiful. I have no words to describe this feeling.
That's so fascinating.
Yeah. So yeah, El Mirador was, it flourished. I mean, they found evidence of Mayan people there, like even, I think I would say 2000 BC already. But the first construction, the first structures and plazas dates from 1000 BC. So it's pretty early. But this city in particularly flourished in 200, I think it was 200 BC until 150 AD, something like that. Mm-hmm. Still in the pre-classic era. It was a commerce center. It was giant, more than I think almost a million people were living.
Wow.
On this, not in the city, but like the city was probably 200,000 people. And then in the surrounding, it was like a million people living in this area.
I know like nothing about this. So I'm so fascinated asking you all these questions. Do they know what happened to the civilization?
So there are different thoughts depending on, you know, the scholars and archaeologists. But so the Mayan civilization disappeared suddenly. And we guess that they kind of like used all their resources. Like they literally, they were like using all the trees. They were using all the resources they had around them. They were also like in wars pretty often. So we guess that like they used all their resources and they vanished those. They just like went somewhere else. So they abandoned the cities. Like Tikal was also abandoned. Tikal came after. It was during the classic period. But they abandoned El Mirador suddenly because, yeah, we guess they didn't have any resources to live there anymore. So, yeah.
That, though, the amount of energy and work it took to build all of the pyramids, I can't imagine just deciding to leave.
It's, I mean,
like that takes like decades to build, doesn't
yeah.
it? Like some people don't see it in their lifetime.
Yeah.
They're working on it.
They were, I think they had also like a lot of like ecological like change, like especially El Mirador, like the northern Guatemala and Pitén is, it's very, it was very dry at some point and they didn't have any, they were not close to water. So they built those magnificent like reservoirs and they were like very advanced hydrologists as well because they could like, you know, use all the rainwater and they survived for so long with it and they built astonishing architecture and they were like really like amazing engineers. But I guess something happened and I mean, I'm not an expert. I can't tell you, but what I heard was people still debate about what really happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very, very special place. Yeah. I would recommend anyone to go visit. And also to, especially the Mirador Bassin Project are helping to develop this ecotourism. Like we need, and they need money, you know, to like help keep the excavating going and protect this area. It's very important because Guatemala is a very poor country. And people there, they're, you know, they're desperate. they need to survive. They need to make money. So there is a lot of logging and slash and burn, and they call it in the surroundings. So they just burn the forest to bring coals and do agriculture there. And it's pretty terrible how they damage this beautiful place. So yeah, that this group of people, they are doing a great, great job, and I encourage everyone to go check it out.
That's so fascinating. You have written about this, right? Do you have this available for people so they can read more?
Yeah, it's on my website. So I actually wrote two articles. So one is about the trek. It's on my website, sovoila.com, S-O-V-O-I-L-A.com. And there is one article about Tikal as well, a Tikal that flourished later during the classic period, but I visited too before going to El Mirador. We went to Tikal, and also astonished. I was so impressed. We climbed those structures, and it was amazing.
So cool. Yeah, all of this is in the show notes. So whatever you're listening on, just expand the notes, and you can easily click over and see Karen's website and read all this and plan your own trek into the jungle.
Yeah. No, I would. I would tell anyone to go there. I mean, it's not that difficult. You can really, the hike is not difficult. It's super flat. It's just very hot and long hours, but it's flat and accessible.
How was it interacting with the local people and the guides?
Oh, that's an interesting story, because also I forgot to mention, so I don't speak Spanish. I'm trying to learn Spanish. I don't speak that much, but our guides didn't talk English.
Oh, and English is also like your third language.
Yeah. So I thought we will have some, like, I thought they will have some basic English, but no, it wasn't, nothing. So we were lucky to have two other couple with us. They translated for us. It was great. But I mean, they're sweet. They were amazing people. We felt very welcome, and they wanted to show where they were coming from, and they told us so much about the forest and about the animals living there and about the history and the runes. But I had to have this translated the entire time, and Riley speaks a little Spanish, so that made it easier.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I just took my very last sip of the cacao that you brought over.
Oh, yay.
So we did a little mini cacao ceremony before starting recording, but you brought this from Guatemala?
From Belize, actually.
Oh, from Belize.
Yes.
Sorry.
Oh, that's fine.
Whoops.
Yeah, I actually got it after Guatemala. We went to the south part of Belize, the Toledo district is called. And there is still a few Mayan villages. And we ended up visiting this amazing cacao farm with this jungle man that I would never forget. His name was Eladio Pop, and he makes the best cacao and chocolate ever. So he welcomed us in his house, and he showed us around the farm, and we picked some cacao, and then his family made us an amazing meal, and we spent the rest of the afternoon just making cacao and making chocolate with his daughter. And it was one of the most amazing, it was just surreal, because you're there and you just interact with the locals, and we don't speak the same languages. We're like complete foreigners. We live in two different worlds, but then we bond and we connect via this. And it was so grounding. And so, yeah, it's a nice memory.
So this is literally from the bean of the cacao. The fruit that they open up.
Exactly. The fruit is actually delicious. I spent a full week eating the fruit. It tastes a bit like mango. It's very sweet. And then you have the bean. So they collect the bean, they roast it, and then they how do you say in English? They are
scrape it.
Yeah, not scrape it, but like
grind it.
Yeah. So they have this amazing stone tool, and you just push the cacao beans, and it makes like a paste of it. And then they drink it. They put it in water and they drink it like this. And you can add a little honey in it, and it tastes delicious. But yeah, and it's also amazing. It has amazing health benefits. super charged in iron, charged in magnesium. It has all the B vitamins you need. It's an amazing plant.
I think zinc is really high in chocolate too, is it? Or cacao chocolate.
Yeah.
I always have this ongoing argument and battle with Bentley if chocolate is good or not. I love chocolate. I would eat it daily. I do eat it daily.
Dark chocolate. Oh, yeah. It's good for you.
Exactly.
It's great for you.
I think it's zinc, and I could be wrong. Or maybe it's just, is it folic acid? Whatever it is.
It's magnesium. It's charged in magnesium. Yeah.
Whatever it is, I know that women are very low in this, and like pumpkin seeds
iron.
Also.
It's iron.
Iron too. But I think it's all these things.
Yeah. And I'm actually like really low in everything, and I'm anemic as well. So I started to drink, since I traveled to Belize, I started to drink cacao, and it's just changing my health. And I feel very energized, and it also grounds you.
It's very heart opening.
Yeah, really, really heart opening. I think it came into my life also for that.
Yes. Yeah. I think that, I mean, I honestly do enjoy eating dark chocolate like daily. And I think if you're eating the right stuff, especially if you're having just straight up cacao, I think he's worried about like sugar intake and whatnot. But I eat like 90% dark. Like I love.
Yeah, so you're good.
That's I love perfect. It dark.
That's pretty good for you.
I've been sneaking chocolate just to not have to deal with it. Bentley shaming me for eating sweets.
Come on.
Well, thank you for sharing your very last bit of the cacao with me. It was so delicious.
I'm planning on having more coming from Belize. I'm trying to order more. So,
yeah. So if Karen can secure us some amazing cacao, we were talking about having a new moon circle where she'll lead us through a ceremony with it. So I really am excited for that. September, maybe.
That would be fantastic.
Stay tuned.
I'm going to work on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, your adventure sounds incredible. I'm so very like wanting to plan a trip now to Guatemala.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go back together. It's actually excavating season right now. So all the archaeologists are there. It's almost like 400 people each season. It's pretty big.
What are they finding? Like tools and...
Oh, they are just excavating the temples and the pyramids that are still there because it's... Probably 10% of the, maybe less than 10% is excavated. So everything has to.
So you only saw like the tiniest bit of what's.
I mean, we saw the main pyramid, so La Denta. La Denta is, it's extraordinary because I think I remember reading that it was 35 football fields in terms of like the base, like the grandness of it. So it's not that high. I mean, it's not that high. It's the highest monument in the Mayan world. It's 230 feet, I believe. And Giza is higher than this, but it's the largest that we find in the world. So it's massive. And you start climbing it, you don't even realize it's still like, you know, it's still trees growing on it and everything, you know. It's not fully like... You could picture the Pyramid of Giza where it's like clean and there is nothing around. Like, no, La Denta is very full of vegetation on top of it. So you start climbing it and it's a slow elevation. And then you arrive at the top and there's three main plazas, three main structures, and then the final climb above the canopy. Yeah, it's incredible. We climbed three different pyramids, actually. One at El Tintal the first night. And then I think it was El Tigre pyramid. Also pretty high. But you don't really see them. It's just like you have to be really close to see them. And then you're like, oh, I'm climbing a hill. Oh, no, I'm not climbing a hill. I'm climbing a pyramid.
That is so fascinating. Nature just wants to take over. I love looking at those photos of like... abandoned shopping malls or houses trees have just like grown and vines and everything. It just wants to take it back over.
Yeah. Can you imagine? I mean, when you're there, you understand what it is, like the power of nature, because it just grew right on top of it. You know, human, when there is no humans around, like just nature takes over.
What from this trip specifically did you kind of take back to your daily life here? Or like what did it kind of open up or change for you?
excuse me. I feel like before going there, I always had problem of like being grounded all over the places. And LA is a city where you can be like really forgetting to be present. So being in a jungle with like no phone service, nothing, walking minimum 5 hours a day, you're just here with your thoughts. And it's, at first, it's kind of disturbing, but then after a while it becomes great because it's kind of a form of meditation, you know, and it helped me to like really, really be present and realize that I need in my everyday life to just stop at some point and enjoy what I'm living, because that's it. So it was actually very grounding. And I feel a little more calm now since I came back. I can transport myself back there when I do my meditations. I love it.
I love that. Totally know what you're talking about with being ungrounded in Los Angeles. I feel like everyone's nervous system is kind of on edge in the city. Like,
totally.
I mean, there's a great vibration. A lot can happen here. Like we were saying, it's very creative. There's so much to do. You could really do anything, but there's also that kind of buzz can be a little...
Totally.
It's a little much.
And there are so many people too. Like, and to find yourself, I think at this point when you're in El Mirador or La Denta, you're like 40 miles deep in the jungle. So you walk for 80 miles round trip during this trip.
80 miles.
Wow. So when you're there, it's like you're already 40 miles deep inside the jungle. So you have, the only noise are the owl and monkeys, which are pretty scary. And that's it. And you're there and you're solo and you have nobody around you except the six or eight other people.
The howler monkeys are super territorial, right? Like they don't want you coming into their space.
Oh my gosh, they want to fight. Yeah. They were like,
I watch Naked Unafraid. That's how I know this.
Oh, I haven't watched it. But yeah, they're pretty, they're impressive. Like first I thought, oh, cute monkeys. You know, they have also the little ones, how do they call them? Araños, manos araños, the spider monkeys. Them are really cute. But the other ones are very territorial and they scream nonstop. So I didn't sleep that well for a week, but it was worth it.
Bentley and I recently got addicted to Naked and Afraid, which if you're not familiar with the show, it's on the Discovery Channel.
I heard about it.
Yeah, two people get put into somewhere... like without humans. So I don't want to say the jungle because they've put them in the desert, like everywhere. But it's a guy and a girl. They're completely naked, which at first I thought that was just like a gimmick for the show. But I think it's really so that you don't have any resources. Like you are literally, you can't use your clothes for anything. You're completely primitive. And you get to bring one, usually some places they let them bring more than one tool, but usually get one tool each.
Wow.
It's just you and your partner and you have a bag and a camera and a map. And then they have a camera crew too. But everywhere they've gone where there's howler monkeys, it's been like a hilarious thing where they like get very freaked out by these monkeys.
Yeah.
And some of them try to like exert their dominance and like try to take over their territory.
Oh,
but the monkeys,
yes.
They are scary. Like I don't think anyone's actually ever...
They try to impress you. They try to like, they come down the tree and they come super close to you and they like, you know, hit themselves and make those noise. And they try to impress you to tell you, get out of here. This is my land. And you're there. I mean, this show sounds amazing. I really want to watch it. It's like back to Hunter Gatherers kind of.
Yeah, kinda. I feel like you would enjoy it. It's really funny because they go for 21 days into whatever situation they're in.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess the human body can only last that long without food. So that's like when they cut it off. So they have 21 days in the jungle or wherever they are to find resources, to find water, to find food, to make fire, to like do all of this stuff. And it sounds like a game show, but they're not getting anything out of it. It's straight up just to be
just
like,
a full experience.
I did it. Yeah.
Okay, send me in. So I'm going to try to convince Riley.
I would love for them to put a couple on there. I don't think they've done a couple yet. Like you're always a stranger, but that would be so hilarious.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's maybe a great idea.
Bentley and I are deeply obsessed. There's like 10 seasons now. And they've started doing these ones called Naked and Afraid XL Challenge where they'll have them go 40 days or 60 days. And
that's
there's
insane.
A current couple right now that is on there. They've been on the show like 4 or 5 times. And we think they're falling in love and we want them to fall in love.
became a reality, like TV reality show.
Oh, it's really funny. Anyways.
We have something pretty similar in France, I think, on an island. Yeah, but they're not naked. They're just on an island and they have to survive as like
Survivor.
Yeah, I think it's that. Yeah.
See, I've never been drawn to those shows at all. And someone told us they love Naked and Afraid. And we tried to watch it once. And I was like, I don't get it. And we were recently in Florida visiting Bentley's mom. And we didn't have internet. Like, their internet wasn't working or something. And this was on the cable TV. And we got sucked in. It's our favorite show.
Okay, I'm going to start watching tonight. You convinced me.
Anyways,
yes.
Is there anything else that you would like to say about your travels or anything in that vein?
No, to just maybe go check it out, the Mirador Bassin Project, miradorbassinproject.com, and then all the information on my website for people who are interested in doing this trek, and I would be more than happy to share about my experience if anyone wants to message me on Instagram or on the website.
I want to go with you. I want you to guide me.
I mean, I'm planning to go back. First of all, I'm planning to go back to Guatemala because I really love this country, but planning to go back there. So maybe we should organize something.
I'm so in. I wear a Mayan calendar ring every day.
Oh, yay.
Yeah. That's so pretty. This in Mexico.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. So one of the other things I wanted to talk about, you've recently introduced me to holotropic breathwork.
Yes.
And then you let me borrow a book that I've been reading. I'm about halfway through. It's called When the Impossible Happens by Stan Grof, which is the founder of holotropic.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
So for people that are listening that have never heard of holotropic breathwork, what is it?
Okay, so I would say it's a method of self-exploration and therapy. So it's such a type of breathwork developed by Dr. Stan Grof in the late 70s. So basically it has different components. So there is three different components. So the first one is deep breathing, and enhanced breathing. So with the mouth, through the mouth. And then you have music, very loud, usually drum music, following your journey. And then at the end, you have integration period where you draw mandalas and share with the group you are with. So it's basically a way to induce yourself and go into non-ordinary states of consciousness without using any substances. And that's why they came up with this breath work is because Dr. Stan Grof and his wife, Christina, amazing people, they were the pioneer in the LSD therapy treatments and MDMA therapy treatments. I think he started to study it in the 50s and then was at SNN giving a lot of therapy and workshops for like more than, I think, 20 years or something.
Yeah,
like
15. Is fascinating. Yeah. So the book that you let me borrow, it goes deeply into his own experience and his own history.
All history,
but he hasn't gotten into the book yet. I don't know if it's in this book or another one, but he hasn't broken down what holotropic is. He's just explaining
his work.
These non-ordinary states.
Say so consciousness.
Yeah, and explaining the experiences people have.
Yeah, so they came up with this breath work because at some point also those substances were like kind of demonized, you know, illegal. It became illegal. So he did thousands of therapies with people. So he studied it very deep and he came up with this method that can bring you to the closest experience that you can have with and LSD-inducing substances.
When did you first hear about holotropic, or when did you first experience it?
Actually, it was like more than a year ago. It was at Burning Man. The story is kind of crazy. It was one of those synchronicity in my life. To make it short, I went to Burning Man, and my friend told me about this event, and it was called Psychedelic Breath. And it was like DJs from Berlin, and I used to live in Berlin, so I was like, I love electronic music. And then this other woman was like giving a breath work, but I was not familiar at all with it, like at all. The only kind of breath work I heard about it was Kundalini yoga. And I So I went there and we ended up arriving at the end of the event. So I didn't really see what was happening. I just saw people laying down the floor and breathing all together. And then saw people like, you know, screaming and crying and laughing and all those emotions. And the energy was like so intense. It was like, it was beautiful. It gives me chill to just talk about it. But so I got curious about what was just happening. And I ended up going to Berlin 2 weeks after Burning Man. And I got in contact with the woman that was leading this breathwork. And she told me, oh, but I also have breathwork in Berlin. Come to my apartment. We have one in 2 days if you're there. So that was my first holotropic session at her place. We were about 10 people that day, I think. I remember she welcomed us with tea and super beautiful and like such a great like energy. And she gave us a brief kind of like speech about what would happen, but without really entering details. So it was kind of like going there blind. And I remember the guy sitting in front of me was like asking her, is it the same than holotropic breathwork? Is it the same method? And so she said, yeah, basically it's the same, but you can't use the name holotropic if you're not certified. So that's the first time I had my first session and I got introduced to holotropic breathwork. So after that, the experience was really, really intense. This method is... It's literally a great method to release any kind of energetic blocks, energetic blocks or like emotional blocks that you have in your body. Back in the days, I had this like huge ball of like guilt inside me, but I wasn't aware of it. Like I went through phases of like kind of fear and guilt and all those things was going on. And my health was declining and I didn't understand what was happening, but it was actually happening in my unconscious and giving me headache and giving me, you know, my spleen was swollen, like all those different things. So after my first session, I remember just feeling so light and I released so much. I cried a lot. It's hard to explain how you feel, but you just like release. You release your emotion, you release what you have inside. And some stuff come up, you had no idea you had them inside you. So it's very powerful. I really believe in the therapeutic use of this method. It's a different kind of therapy. You don't talk, you know, your conscious self don't process anything. You just breathe and go inward. You go inside. You go places you don't want to go, but you have two options, you face it or you stop it. And it's important to go and to surrender to the experience. That was how I got.
I've done a breathwork session that was very transformative. I don't know what the technical name of the style that I did was, but I definitely had stuff moving in me and my body was uncontrollably like...
Yeah.
Laughing, but not laughing. Like I was kind of like...
Yeah, you felt things happening in your body.
It was so, so neat. And it was very, very short. It was very, very brief, like a 15-minute breath thing that one of the people in our yoga teacher training like led us through. And he wasn't even very, I think, versed on what he was doing, but I had a very transformative experience. Yeah. So when you first started talking about this type of breath work that you were doing, I was... very intrigued.
Yeah.
And then from the book that I'm reading, a lot of people have experiences where they relive their birth.
Their birth, yeah.
Have so, you had any of those? You don't have to share anything that you don't want to share, but
no,
like,
I'm fascinated. I'm open to it.
Okay, cool.
They call it transpersonal experiences. So this technique also helps you to go into the perinatal, they call it a perinatal period of your life, so before your birth. Many people have experienced death and rebirth linked to the death of the ego most of the time and then the rebirth of the self. I never experienced it yet. I had only 4 sessions since then, but I'm... I'm like going on a workshop when I come back from France, and I'm starting my training actually because I want to be a facilitator. Yes. And be training it. It takes a while, and I'm just in a process to understand. But I'm excited to start this journey. So it will start in end of September.
That's so exciting. But yeah,
so the perinatal experience is apparently pretty strong. Any kind of transpersonal and mystic things can happen. Like some people reported to relive some past lives. Some people spoke different languages and they were not aware of. They just link to this, what Carl Jung calls the collective unconscious. This like kind of like huge, you know, map and cloud of what's happening around us. But I can't explain it.
That's the most powerful thing though, is being able to experience. So like, as I'm reading this book, I'm fascinated. Mm-hmm. I'm like, wow, is this like, how did that happen? How did this person go through this? But I think the only way to truly understand it is to
do it. For sure. Yeah. It's, it helped many people, for people who had PTSD, people who had depression, people who were suicidal. Like, it helps. I truly believe in the power of this technique. So you should try it. You should come with me.
I definitely want to learn the technique specifically. I want to come with you. Let's do it.
Yeah,
I'm really sold. But I think breath in general is so powerful.
It's so powerful.
Daily life.
Yeah.
And most people are so disconnected from it. I mean, you're constantly breathing in and out, in and out.
You don't even realize it.
All day long.
Yeah.
It's automatic.
And you don't realize when you block also your breathing.
You don't realize when you're holding it. You don't realize when you're breathing. What's the word? So when you inhale, your belly should fill up with air.
Yeah.
It should be big.
Yeah.
When you exhale, the belly should come back in and empty out. Some people that have experienced traumatic experience, they're... body automatically does this reverse breathing, where when mm-hmm. they inhale, their stomach gets tight, and when they exhale, their stomach relaxes.
That's insane.
So yeah. I feel like in daily life, even just understanding your breath, becoming more connected. I know personally, whenever I'm in a very stressed out place and I feel like everything's going wrong, the moment I stop and I take like a deep breath or three breaths, it's a total shift in everything.
Totally.
It's like
it changed your consciousness.
Space. I think, it almost feels like you can change how you're experiencing time.
Totally.
Like it almost feels like, oh, I slowed down. Like, okay, here we go.
Oh.
That's why, at least with my yoga, I'm very breath oriented in the way I teach.
Yeah.
You know this. Karen's usually in my morning classes.
Your classes. Your Monday morning classes are my favorite.
Yes. Karen's usually there if you ever want to come practice with us.
It's so fun.
But I try to work in the breath every single posture, and then at the end, really letting people get back to their natural breathing. But I think whatever holotropics techniques are, they must just be so powerful.
I mean, it's a life-changing experience. I really want to dive into it. It's very powerful, but also don't try it solo. Like you need to be with people, because so there is. In the session, there is always like a breather and a sitter. You need someone that watch you. You need like a kind of a guide, someone who can do body work on you if anything happened, or like just to feel a presence, you know, to feel secure. Even if there is no risk at all, you know, because you don't inject any substances, it's just your breath, you still need someone. So never practice alone, just go with facilitators, people who know what they are doing. And you will go on a journey to yourself.
I totally understand why they don't want people calling it holotropic if you're not certified, because that's...
Totally.
I'm sure that you have to learn all the techniques.
Yeah.
Does Stan and Christina still lead sessions?
Oh, they do.
Or no?
They do. I mean, I'm sure they'll like... I don't know if he will ever retire, but I heard they were like, I mean, this year they were at SNN leading a conference about psychoactive and holotropic breath work and everything.
If you guys are not familiar with Esalen Institute, one of our guests in the past, actually, she'd studied there too.
Wow.
I've never been, but it's in Big Sur. I've been to Big Sur several times, but it's basically a space in Big Sur where they have workshops and you can live there. There's a hot spring. That's what it's really known for. And you can go sit out over the cliff.
It's a self-exploration center.
Have you been there?
So I tried to go 2 weeks ago, but the hot springs were closed. And I'm planning to go on a workshop at some point. But I drove by and it's the most amazing, I mean, view in Big
Sur.
Yeah,
it's right
gorgeous.
On the edge of the mountain or in the cliffs.
It's very, so cool. A very spiritual place. Like the energy there is vibrant.
That's goals. I want to look up their schedule and see how ridiculous it is to actually go to a session with them. I bet it's pretty like sought after.
They don't do any holotropic breath work. They have different things, but if you want to do the breath work, they have stations in Topanga. Actually, I'm going to one in Topanga and in Joshua Tree in a retreat center.
Awesome.
So yeah. But yeah, Stan and Christina were living there for a long time. And I think they met because she kind of had like they called it like a spiritual emergency, you know, and it helped her going through this phase and this moment in her life and developed this work together. And they're fascinating people.
They talk about it a little bit in the book I'm reading, but I don't know if I've read all of it yet.
No, I think it's just, it's a little, just a little bit this book, but I have the other one that you should read.
What's the other one called again?
It's called, it's just called Holotropic Breathwork by Stan Grove and Christina Grove.
Cool.
Yay.
So fascinated about that. I really, really, really want to go.
Yeah, we will. We will.
So lastly, I always bring crystals into the room that I think kind of embody the person. And I had a hard time with you.
Yeah, you did.
But you recently helped me when I needed to shoot our watermelon tourmaline. Mm-hmm. And I think watermelon tourmaline will always make me think of you because of this.
I love watermelon tourmaline. I'm wearing it right now. Yours, actually.
Yes.
I can't take it off. I love this one.
Yeah, she's wearing the ombre bar necklace that goes from light green to pink or the other way around, just depending on how you wear it. But watermelon tourmaline is said to be a very balancing stone, very clearing. Yeah. How do you feel when you wear it?
I feel actually really balanced. And I feel like it links me to my heart in a way. Before you gifted this to me, I wore another watermelon tourmaline, a bigger piece. So I've been wearing it since the past 6 months. I love it.
Wow.
And yeah, I love the colors. And I'm really into the pink and the green and the purple. I'm really attracted by it.
Yeah, pink and green specifically are both colors that are connected to the heart. So like the heart chakra color is green, but most people think of like pink, like rose quartz, like love. Uh-huh. Both those colors are. So it's very heart-based.
I love it.
On the table next to you, there are two watermelon tourmaline. One of the little bit of a bigger ones. I was gifted that one, so it's a lot nicer. It's very neat. And then
that's beautiful.
There's another one, that little itty-bitty baby. I don't know if you see it. It's on the side.
Yeah, so cute.
That one I mined in San Diego.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. I love it.
It's yours. You can keep it.
Is it mine?
It's yours.
You're the
It's like
sweetest.
The lightest pink and green. It's so tiny, you guys. It's like smaller than my pinky.
Oh my gosh, I love you. You're the sweetest. You always have the best gift. You know that?
You're so like, sweet.
Thank you so much.
I think that giving gifts is one of my love languages. I love gifting people.
I love too. I actually take more pleasure at Christmas when I see people opening my gifts than me opening my own gifts.
Same. I love giving. I just like, I have a note in my phone that has gift ideas for like every single one of my friends and family.
That's the
randomly,
cutest thing.
Just so
ever.
I think of it.
You're so thoughtful. So cute.
Well, you know, when it gets time to give, you're like, oh my God.
Then you're ready.
What should I do? Yeah, it just helps.
I actually just got Riley is my partner. Riley is birthday gift. I'm excited. It's another adventure. We're going to Chaco Canyon in September.
Is he
going
to listen to this?
Oops.
Do you want me to edit that out?
No. It will listen after it came out. Then after the birthday, we'll wait a little bit. It's okay.
I can edit it out.
That's fine.
So Riley and you met here in Los Angeles.
We did. When I was trying to figure it out how to move to LA.
Do you feel comfortable talking about him or do you want to keep it sacred?
Yeah, he's amazing. I love him so much. So we met like 5 years ago and it was super unexpected because I wanted to move away from like, you know, like I didn't want to be with someone or anything, but sometimes things happen in life and, you know, it just happened. So we met and we connected and then he visited me in France and then I moved to LA and we started to date and here we are. We're married now. Woo. He's an amazing woodworker. He's so talented. Yes. He has his own business, Meishmade, and he makes furniture. He designs everything. He makes it.
He's really so talented. Beautiful furniture. Yeah. I have a table that he didn't make from scratch, but he refurbished a vintage table. I love it.
Yeah, no, he's awesome. And he's also a very talented musician. So when I met him, he was touring a lot. And first I was like, I'm not sure about that. But then now he found like a good balance between music and having his own business and our relationship. It's fun.
It sounds like you guys share a lot of similar interests. Like he does the holotropic breathwork as well.
Oh, yeah. He got into it too. We share. We have this similar interests for sure. I think we connect really well since forever, but it became deeper, I would say, a year ago. Our relationship is growing and it's pretty cool. I'm very happy.
And he's totally down to backpack and...
Oh, yes. Oh, he didn't even blink when I told him, okay, we go to Guatemala, prep the bag, and we're leaving. It's like... Okay. You know what he signed for. Like he knows me pretty well. And he's super adventurous too. Like he loves like cliff jumping. He loves backpacking, camping, like everything like outdoor related. We bond around those things.
He's coming with you on your next trip. So you are leaving very soon.
Actually, I'm going to Mexico. He's not coming.
He's not coming to Mexico. Yeah. But then is he going to?
He's going to Berlin. We're going to Berlin. Yeah, for sure. He's meeting me there. And then we go to south of France and the center of France too, a little bit in the Alps. And then we fly back to LA. Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun summer.
I'm so excited for your adventures, but I am going to miss you.
I'm going to miss you too.
I'm going to miss you.
Someday you have to come with me. Someday you have to come to south of France. I need to show you around.
Yes, definitely. For sure. Thank you so much, Karen.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, one last thing I will say. If you want to follow Karen on Instagram, your Instagram handle.
It's my nickname. It's Karen McBags, McBags.
Karen McBags. Where did that name come from?
Oh, it comes from high school. It's a funny story, but to make it short, I traveled a lot. And so I was always with my little bag, carrying my bag around.
She's bag lady.
Yeah. Oh, my best friend. We all have the same last name, nickname, actually, with my two best friends, Gan and Sally. Yeah, they're all McBags too.
So on Instagram, their name.
Yeah, you can find us as the McBags family. So Karen McBags, my real name is Karen Itch, but yeah, I go by Karen McBags. Yeah, and the website also for the travel adventures is silvala.com.
Karen, did we meet at a moon circle or where did we meet?
We met at a moon circle. You don't remember?
It was a moon
circle. We met at the moon circle in Santa Monica, actually. The last one.
Yes, it was. Okay, I remember completely.
Yay.
That was just a while ago.
I think I was following you on Instagram and then I saw that you had the circle and then we met and since that day.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I came to all the moon circle. I love those circles. I love them. It's just such a great safe space and everyone connects so much to each other. I feel so rejuvenated at each time I come after the circle. It's just like, oh, I feel better.
I do too. I can't wait for you to lead a proper cacao ceremony.
Yes, let's talk about it.
Yes, please. Do you have any final words you want to end on?
Well, I think we went through everything. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I really
appreciate it. It's super cozy here. I love it.
And this is coming from someone who's slightly claustrophobic. The closet's not that small.
But I feel like the red curtains helps. It has this like theater vibe.
Yeah.
Like cabaret theater. I don't know. I love it.
So soft.
Yeah. No, it doesn't feel like you're in a closet, actually.
Okay, good. I'll use this review for if people are like, I can't come.
Thanks for having me.
Thank
love
you, Karen.
You.
I love you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Conversations with Moon Body Soul. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe to hear more and leave us a review. If you have any special guests or any requests that you'd like to hear on the podcast, please send us an email to hello@moonbodysoul.com.